Zoning unprecedented density here will immediately invite a project that simply does not belong. Our general plan update is a statement of our values and expectations, and it's our opening offer to developers. Please scale this back to ensure the future very soon project here brings growth that's authentic to this neighborhood and to Atascadero. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is Jean Collins, and if you could pull up map that shows the San Benito Del Rio area, as I wanted to specifically address the area that several of you spoke about today, and Mayor Bourbeau actually drove down our road. So I am a retired elementary music teacher. I taught lots of people's kids in this room, I think. As I live on Sia Road, which is in that orange-brown area that the zoning is increasing. And I would appreciate it if as an elementary teacher, if I had a crayon, I would color maybe 8 to 9 of those little boxes yellow instead of orange and brown. So I would appreciate it if you would consider, before you vote this new zoning or increase the zoning so that it's in the plan for 20 years, maybe consider some of the lots, as Mayor Bourbeau pointed out, that are single homes on 1 acre properties that have been there. I've lived in my house for 42 years. I am in yellow, but my neighbors 2 doors down or 3 doors down are now increasing to the orange, and further down as you go around that dog leg, it's increasing to the brown. And already from the open house last week to what I see right there, it looks like there's been a change. That flag lot that Councilman Peak marked, part of it's now orange on there. At the open house, it was the darker brown. So I appreciate that you're all considering it. You received our letters, that you drove on a road, that you just consider. And if there are other lots that people, some of my neighbors are here, and they'll speak more specifically. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. Thank you for hearing me this evening. My name is Deborah Hintergart, and I am here along with many of my neighbors from a quiet, little-known, non-city-owned road, much of which is dirt, by the name of Silla, S-I-L-L-A Road, in lovely, unique city of Atascadero, California, a city abundant with trees and rolling hillsides. A city that allows animal keeping rights to homeowners on over an acre. A city whose council and administration values its rural beauty. So, in keeping with your values, I and my neighbors respectfully request that you maintain the rural character of our road, Silla Road, by not changing the zoning along any of Silla Road from our current residential single-family one zoning. And I especially request that the 3-acre parcel at 3350 Sierra Road, which unfortunately has a narrow strip touching El Camino Real, but no access nor road from El Camino Real, we ask that it not be zoned for 24 units per acre, or I know it's multi, I'm not sure how many, as proposed in the 2045 plan, but please allow it to remain RSF1, one home per acre, the same as my adjoining lot and my neighbor's lots on Silla Road. You can see how apartment buildings next to 1-acre properties keeping horses, goats, chickens would definitely disrupt the beauty and rural aspect of our neighborhood. We are at your mercy, and we are trusting that you will seriously and sincerely consider our request. Leave the zoning of properties along Silla Road, RSF1, and especially leave that 3-acre parcel, 3350 Silla Road, as RSF1. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. Thank you so much for this opportunity to address you. My name is Sally Salino, and I also live on Sia Road. We have been in our home for 40 years. We love our street. We love our neighborhood. We love our neighbors. It's a very stable neighborhood. I don't think anyone new has moved in probably decades. My request is similar, the same as my neighbors. And I would also like to say I represent two other neighbors who weren't able to be here tonight that are also in agreement. We would like you to keep what is RFS or whatever, the single family residence, keep that the same and make all of Sia on both sides the same as single family residence zone. And thank you for your attention. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Last call. Okay, we will bring it back to council for discussion. I want to make clear that we are essentially this evening providing guidance on based on consensus. We don't have to have a specific motion unless we need that for our own clarity in terms of what guidance we're providing. But generally, we're looking for consensus on some critical issues that we provide guidance to staff on any changes we'd like to see in the draft general plan. I'm going to start because I have some questions for you. And that is gentlemen mentioned the principal property and the principal project, which is something I've been on council long enough to remember that was originally commercially zoned property, correct?
Yes.
And so we had some discussions at the time, and to go back to comments you've made, we, in terms of why we don't like to, quote, give up commercial property, because if we allow, residential on a given property, housing is what will be built and what will be, what would take over, because developers generally know they can sell a house or rent a house or rent apartments. We need a balance of commercial development in order to provide our residents as things to buy and tax revenue to fund the city. But what I'm getting at here is that was previously commercial. So it went and it progressively over multiple iterations of the project became more and more residential and less mixed use. And now we're talking about, if you could go that to that map, it sounds like we're essentially giving up on the commercial idea and it's becoming multifamily.
It was originally approved as this mixed use project. The reality is the mixed use was horizontal, not vertical. So what got approved by the city over a decade ago was a residential project with a cornerstone little commercial property, which later on became the car wash. Right next to it, there was also some work live. It never got developed. So what's on the map now is proposed to be high density multifamily because it's close in, it's near a freeway interchange, it's surrounded by commercial.
Right.
And it's in an area that's very intense.
For me, I mean, the work live was almost a fig leaf to try to keep some aspect of commercial because it was like, oh, we're going to, this'll be downstairs. This will be an architect's office or, somebody like that. But it was really going to turn into another bedroom. The point being, though, I mean, I'm a big believer in property rights. And as I've sat on the council, I've always tended to look like, okay, what's the zoning? What does the zoning allow? And I tend to want to allow that because I think that's the reasonable expectation of a person who bought property. But in this case, this is where like institutional memory comes in. Because if we made this multifamily and I joined the council 10 years from now, I would stare at the neighbor and go, well, hey, it says it's multifamily. What are you complaining about? that's what it's zoned. That's what, the new owner has a right to expect. But in this case, we've taken something that was commercial and now we've turned it into, we're talking about turning it into multifamily right next door to fairly large lots. My question is, when you have these situations where we're going to have multifamily bumping up against single family, talk about mixed use. Can you have essentially where, whatever's abutting up against the single family lots, that on that portion of the property, if you will, you kind of have a horizontal higher density in the front towards El Camino, lower density in the back near the neighbors. Is that a, without changing the zoning itself, is that something we could do or lay out as a requirement where there's not enough room for a transition zone?
To chime in a little bit. I'm Kelly Gleason, planning manager. Nice to see you all. So today the property is actually zoned multifamily. It was commercial way back in the day, and then when the project was approved, we actually did a rezone at that time to change the designation from commercial to multifamily. So it is multifamily today, but it is a lower density multifamily. The current general plan proposal in this area, again, Pino Solo is an area that has sewer availability and easier access to El Camino Real and some of our interchanges. So you can see that the west side of Pino Solo is proposed to be designated as low density multifamily. So that would be a higher density zone as well. And then the other side of Pino Solo staying single family, but with that 4-unit per acre designation possibility for those particular parcels. So in terms of transition, the proposal does include a transition. It is definitely a different transition than what is there today. So there could be discussion on the appropriateness of the proposed designations.
Okay, thank you for that answer. I thought that property had been rezoned and not given up.
No, we did the little square that is along Principal, right there. Mm-hmm. That one is currently zoned commercial. It was where the live work units were. Again, kind of a token live work component, and didn't really seem realistic to hold on to in terms of a potential development proposal in the future.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And speaking of sewer, if you could go over, I don't know if we have it on the map, but it's kind of on the left side of this map, Portola, where it's inside the pinkish urban services line, which usually is described as we're going to do urban services in there, which is most frequently, at least what comes to mind first, is sewer services available or is intended to ultimately be available inside the urban services line. We've had requests from people on that stretch of road, I think, right in where the word Portola is, you know, that they would, you know, they wanted to rezone. But of course, currently there's no sewer available, and there's no, I don't believe, any specific plan to bring sewer there anywhere in the near future. But we have somewhere in this, we have a statement about the availability of sewer affecting density, or at least I think we have a statement in there to that effect, because that's really a key item, whereas if sewer became available in a given area, then it might be appropriate to change the zoning in that area to allow more density. But as long as sewer is not available, it shouldn't be, you know, higher density. Because for one thing, the Water Quality Control Board wouldn't let us allow too many, you know, new septic tanks.
That's correct. Generally, the lot size minimum to have a on-site wastewater treatment or septic system is 1 acre. A lot of those lots along Portola are much less than 1 acre, so they're non-conforming. They don't conform to today's standards, and they don't have sewer at this particular time. And the street is actually uphill, right, from the property, so it's somewhat problematic unless you fix those basic infrastructure needs. But also, we have to look at the bigger picture. Just because they can get access to sewer doesn't mean we have the sewer capacity, the wastewater treatment plant, to accommodate it. So as soon as you start adding these properties in, you add a significant magnitude as you go along. And, you know, how far do you go with that? I think what we promised our community early on is that we would generally preserve most of the west side as it is today, but understanding that there's a lot of non-conforming lots that are smaller than what we would allow out there today. And so I think we are getting requests along this section of Portola Road to reduce the minimum lot size and to allow a much smaller lot size. But the infrastructure is not there at the moment to do that. And it also would set a precedent to continue that spread further to the north or to the west along that line.
Okay, thank you. On downtown, on page 318, we talk about downtown mixed use. I don't see any reference to, I mean, so we say the downtown mixed-use place type is characterized by moderate to high building heights. And we do say that this district has the highest density of any district, which is logical to say in any city that your highest density would be in your downtown. I don't see in one of my, you know, guiding principles throughout this entire general plan update process has been that we should allow taller buildings downtown. I don't see any mention of that as a premise or as a policy in the downtown area, that not only will it have the highest density, which by implication would mean height, but that we would also, the tallest buildings in the city would be allowed downtown.
We don't have a specific policy that calls out height specifically. That's normally more of a zoning ordinance implementation of the character of downtown being shown as your most intense area. So that would come forward with a zoning ordinance update. I don't know if we want to say specifically in the general plan that we're absolutely going to go to four stories or in all situations. Some of that comes with some design standards and some nuance that would come with the comprehensive zoning update.
Right, but I mean, if you say you're going to have allow taller buildings, or that, or just simply say the tallest buildings in the city would be in the allowed in the downtown area, that's a statement of general principle that seems appropriate to the general plan. And then, yes, you have a zoning ordinance that, you know, kind of carries out the details of that.
Yeah. So, if you wanted to modify the character statement to include height, we could do that.
Okay. Let's see. Then. If you could go back to the map that contains SIA that we're discussing. Actually, wait, don't leave, because you got the triangle up here, and I wanted to talk about the triangle. I drove the triangle today, most of the streets, although you can see it was there. I'm sorry, I told you to change, and now I'm going back to you on the triangle. There we go. You can see there's a number of streets, so I'm not sure I hit them all. You were talking about changing a lot of these, you know, to low-density multifamily. I noticed in driving that it's mostly all single family homes, but there are in just, I'll say, almost seemingly random spots, duplexes, triplexes, you know, four unit things, or perhaps 16 units in four different buildings or something. So there are spots of multifamily. I'm not sure how they got there in the middle of what is otherwise a single family neighborhood. Perhaps there's some history there, or whether that even happened under city or prior to city, because they look right around in that 70s age range. Did that happen under any particular city guidance?
Those happened prior to city incorporation. They appear to, and that's the construction style. A lot of things happened where there were different densities under the county's general plan for those areas. But the proposal here is a low-density multifamily, and the reasoning for that is we're trying to get ahead of what the state's already allowing. The state's already allowing four and even five units per single-family property in here, and we're trying to match that by putting multifamily zoning in that is more definitive of saying, here's what we'll allow, instead of the state just allowing it haphazardly, here's what we'll allow, and then we have objective design standards that guide that. The intent behind low-density multifamily, as I mentioned earlier, is really that cottage development is really a single-family type development and a plan development where they have very small yards, very small lots, but they're that postage stamp development.
I guess the question would be, that's what we desire. That might be what we desire. But as I drive along and see these, you know, kind of boxes from the 1970s, you know, it certainly would be a temptation to build a box, you know, with four units in it so you can rent it out. Because obviously have a need for housing, and so they're going to rent. They can be ugly, they can be, you know, small, they can be whatever. They're going to rent because there's a, you know, crucial need for people to be able to rent things. How do we feel comfortable, and certainly have neighbors feel comfortable, you know, that they're going to end up with four cottages next door instead of a box?
So zoning it multifamily allows us to implement our objective design standards. We don't have objective standards for single family, and we can't create them necessarily because SB 9 and ADU law take away certain authority to do any sort of design regulation. So under SB 9 and ADU law, you could build a fourplex on a single family property today. You could have a duplex or a fourplex on a vacant lot It could be something like that, but because we have objective design standards, we hope that that box integrates better into the neighborhood and has a little bit better design aesthetic. It's kind of the missing middle, for lack of, it's for our gentle density, where you might have a duplex in a backyard, you might have a little fourplex on a corner. There might be some styles, but we hope with objective design standards through a multifamily zoning that we're able to sort of help continue neighborhood character better.
Okay. Do we also, you know, since the general plan, separate question now, since the general plan is to me a kind of a vision and a guide, I don't see any language in there regarding our attempts, you know, which now looks like we granted the opportunity to purchase the Armory site. Always hopeful that, you know, perhaps Fine Arts Academy could become something else, and that function could go to one of the other campuses. Since I, you know, as Gene would know, I'm an avid supporter of the Fine Arts Academy, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be in its current physical place. Do we have anything in here about the city's desire to, you know, like say, develop the Armory site and or other sites in the downtown area?
I'm not sure we have specific policies to talk about those, and it's certainly an option we could develop those policies if we don't have them.
Okay.
And currently on the draft map, I think those sites are shown as public because of what they are today.
Right.
And I think it's been brought up that they could be shown as something else, just downtown commercial, and you can do that, which sort of encapsulates that, you know, future desire.
I'm not looking at that, because I mean, ultimately, if we purchase the Armory, it's public until such time as we would try to perhaps sell it to do something else, but we might want to keep it public and use it for a public purpose.
And actually, the Armory property on here is actually shown as downtown commercial already. I was referring to the Fine Arts Academy that's shown as public, but the Armory is shown as downtown commercial.
Right, I understand why that occurred. Okay, all right, can we go back now to the SIA map? Let me get to that question. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot. We had a request to go ahead and take a bathroom break after public comment, and I forgot. Sorry, Councilman Pick. So yeah, let's take a brief bathroom break since we concluded public comment, and then I can come back and ask some more questions. Let's see, the time is 8:22. Let's reconvene at 8:30. Seth was being nice and okay. Do you want to? Okay, otherwise I could let you talk now. I'll just postpone.
AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and resume in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL.
I now invite the House, by the resolution which stands in my name, to record its approval of the steps taken and to declare its confidence in the new government. To form an administration of this scale and complexity is a serious undertaking in itself. But it must...
Do we have anything in here about the city's desire to... you know, like say develop the Armory site and or other sites in the downtown area?
I'm not sure we have specific policies to talk about those, and it's certainly an option we could develop those policies if we don't have them.
Okay.
And currently on the draft map, I think those sites are shown as public because of what they are today.
Right.
And I think it's been brought up that they could be shown as something else, such as downtown commercial, and you can do that, which sort of encapsulates that, you know, future desire.
I'm not looking at that, because I mean ultimately if we purchase the Armory, it's public until such time as we would try to perhaps sell it to do something else, but we might want to keep it public and use it for a public purpose.
And actually, the Armory property on here is actually shown as downtown commercial already. I was referring to the Fine Arts Academy that's shown as public, but the Armory is shown as downtown commercial.
Right. And I understand why that occurred. okay. All right. Can we go back now to the SIA map? Let me get to that question. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot. We had a request to go ahead and take a bathroom break after public comment, and I forgot. Sorry, Councilman. So, yeah, let's take a brief bathroom break since we concluded public comment.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and resume in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
I now invite the House, by the resolution which stands in my name, to record its approval of the steps taken and to declare its confidence in the new government. To form an administration of this scale and complexity is a serious undertaking in itself. But it must be remembered that we are in the preliminary stage of one of the greatest battles in history, that we are in action at many points in Norway and in Holland, that we have to be prepared in the Mediterranean, that the air battle is continuous, and that many preparations have to be made here at home. In this crisis, I hope I may be pardoned if I do not address the House at any length today. I hope that any of my friends and colleagues or former colleagues who are affected by the political reconstruction will make all allowances for any lack of ceremony with which it has been necessary to act. I would say to the House, as I said to those who have joined the government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our policy? I will say, it is to wage war by sea, land, and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalogue of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. For without victory there is no survival. Let that be realized. No survival for the British Empire. No survival for all that the British Empire stood for. No survival for the urge and impulse of the ages that mankind will move forward towards its goal. But I take up my task with buoyancy and hope. I feel sure that our cause will not be suffered to fail among men. At this time, I feel entitled to claim the aid of all. And I say, come then, let us go forward together with our united strength.
Everything about Babe Ruth was bigger than life. He was the greatest player on the greatest team in America's biggest city, at a time when baseball was far and away America's great spectator sport. It was 1947 and Babe Ruth was dying. He stood on the field at Yankee Stadium, the house he built, as Yankee announcer Mel Allen introduced him to the sellout crowd, which had come to pay him tribute.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Bambino, the Sultan of Swat, Babe Ruth!
And now, as the cheers of those fans rang out one more time, Babe Ruth walked to the microphone, and in a voice turned rasped and husky from disease, he spoke these words of appreciation and farewell.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You know how bad my voice sounds. Well, it feels just as bad. You know this baseball game of ours comes up from the only real game, I think, in the world, baseball.
Okay, we're gonna.
There's been so many lovely things said about me, and I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to thank everybody. Thank you.
A year later, in August of 1948, Babe Ruth died. Presiding over the funeral in New York's St. Patrick's Cathedral was friend and fan Francis Cardinal Spellman, the Archbishop of New York.
Changes. Notes that I took that I'd like to have on record would be non-city maintained roads. I think that's been brought up a couple times. I'd like to see that brought back at a future council meeting to discuss the specifics on that or strategic planning. Density, I know we had several folks speak and also sent us emails about the increases in density. I always want to make sure that we're staying compatible with the neighborhood, and that would be making sure that that density is not increasing. And that we don't have 3- and 4-story buildings directly across from residential single-family homes. So if we can work with those areas, I know in the past staff has been very accommodating to residents that looked at the map and saw these changes affecting them drastically, that we work to make sure that we're creating the changes that we really want this community to be going forward. We already discussed adding a few more things to the glossary, so some of us can reference a little bit more detail on how that's applicable to these new innovation and flex. And that's all I have to report. So thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you. We will keep those in mind as we deliberate, and because we're just going to try to provide consensus to staff in terms of guidance. So we'll keep those comments in mind. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go back to, we're on the proper... I'm trying to reorient. Yes, this is the map with SIA on it. Question for staff then, how did we arrive at, you know, we have the brown area, the medium density multifamily. As I go further south, like down to, is it La Uva, is the cul-de-sac that's two parcels north of the purple or violet area? I think that's La Uva. It could be Marco. Yeah. And then La Uva is a straight line, I guess. How did staff decide how many of those parcels to make brown? Because in some cases it's two parcels in some cases it's three parcels in. And, you know, on Marco and La Uva, we already have single family homes at the end of those particular streets. So we're getting very close to them. And then we're turning, again, you know, two. And why two layers of lots, it looks like, turning into orange? What's the thought process and how deep off of El Camino Real to make these changes?
A lot of it's based on the existing property lines, number one. And number two, how can you create, if you were to think, you know, if these properties became vacant in the future, how can you create a large enough building area to support a project? So both of those designations were done with that respect. In addition to looking at the topography, a lot of that slopes pretty substantially up from El Camino.
And the effect of the slope then, because it seems like the more slope something is, the less appropriate it is for multifamily.
Yes.
Or in terms of higher density anyway, I mean.
Sure.
Okay. Because and as we kind of discussed earlier, we could say that the orange areas, instead of being low density multifamily, could be the you know, not necessarily kept at 1 acre, but kept at essentially a quarter acre for single family. But that would invite multiple, under state law, it would invite multiple ADUs, potential SB9 lot splits, or what?
It could, but even in multifamily, ADUs are allowed now, and even multiple ADUs. So there's
as a practical matter, though, to consider. If a property is zoned multifamily, wouldn't somebody who buys it for that purpose put the maximum number of multifamily units on it and not build an ADU out front?
One would hope, but here's the deal. Very recent changes to state law do allow for multiple ADUs, not SB9 units, but ADUs in a multifamily zone. And ADUs, for the most part, are exempt from development impact fees. So there is an incentive to build ADUs first and then multifamily units after to maximize the density on a property. So it could go several different ways. Yeah.
Sort of perverts the meaning of accessory when you think of an accessory dwelling unit as being accessory to a primary dwelling unit, not build it first.
It's an argument that staff's having right now with HCD on the premise of that.
That's the State Housing and Community Development Department.
Yes.
Understand. Okay, because I feel like I understand what we're trying to do here, and I totally understand and support the general idea of, you know, creating the medium density multifamily right along El Camino itself. As we've, you know, it may have been appropriate, you know, 40 years ago, but, you know, it's right along our main drag. Sewer service is available. It seems an appropriate place for higher density. But when we get off the road onto Sia and that, you know, that second tier properties above the brown there, the orange, to me, multifamily feels too dense for that area, if you will. And I think about the individual property owners who've been there, and maybe they've got a vacant lot next door. You know, having had in mind for decades that they have the security of it being a lower density use, and now we would change it into a higher density use. It's one thing to have the state tell us you've got to allow this and got to allow that, and they end up, you know, with a house, an ADU, and a junior ADU all next door. But another thing for us, the city, to say, yeah, but we're going to let somebody build 12 units an acre. And some of these lots are an acre, so essentially we'd be allowing, you know, that many units right next door to these folks. So I definitely have concern about that, and would be inclined to not have the orange be orange, have it be remain single family, but at a higher density level than 1 acre. Okay, that's my thoughts on that. I think I've asked my other questions. I'll turn it over to my colleagues for their comments. And remember, what we're trying to do here is provide some specific, not super detailed, but provide some guidance to staff on changes we'd like to see in the general plan draft, or where we're at in terms of, and that looks basically okay to us. So I can start again on my left with Councilmember Peake.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement to some of Heather's comments before she had to leave, and then some of yours in terms of the stark transition from multifamily to residential. You know, they have the yellow urban residential is kind of funny anyway, because a lot of the houses through this whole hillside, the San Benito neighborhood on next door, however you label that area, they're all like, everyone's got animals, everyone's got, it feels rural. It doesn't feel like you're in an urban, you're subject to SB9. It seems weird to think that you could put a fourplex in your backyard, like we're San Diego County, with all these fourplexes going up in my dad's neighborhood. It's the same law. So I think the stark transition from seemingly like the visual of this neighborhood is more rural than it is urban SFR. So I think that's just something that's important to me, is to have less of a impact along this block from, you know, from the mixed use 777 property, and then the lots right now that have all the tractor equipment stored on it, next door to that, leading up to UVA. I think UVA is the furthest north cul-de-sac that's mostly Bolden, right before San Benito.
I'm pretty sure. That whole area in there, I think, just needs to be reevaluated in terms of its transition from El Camino to the what I would call more rural properties in town, even though they are designated as urban just because of the locality of where they are. So I think that I would be agreeable to revisiting those areas, as well as on the west side of the 101, starting on the San Ramon Barrel Creek side, down towards the Church of Latter-day Saints, big parcel in the on the south, reevaluating whether or not mixed use with some residential component through there, or at least some of it potentially, to ease on the traffic side, but also you could recoup some of the housing elements that maybe will glean from higher density areas and be able to have that option in areas like that. Cause the Barrel Creek project is going to be a cool little hub with restaurants and, you know, frivolity, neighborhood merrymaking, you know, hopefully. So we could have a walking area with people living, working, walking across the bridge, go to the grocery store. I mean, there's this whole area is going to be like the north gate of Atascadero, you know. I'm not sure if that's coined, but now we just coined it. And I just think that those are the two areas that on the north end that I'm concerned with. And I think that also, you know, when I moved to, I bought my first house in Atascadero. I was a renter before, but 2014 over by Chalk Mountain. And then a year after that, a year or two after that, this is before the Quickie Car Wash was built. They had plans for the mixed use over there. And I also have my previous tenancy for my painting company was over by across the street from West Coast Towing. And that area of El Camino is super sketchy, both for pedestrian and for traffic and for collisions. And, you know, we've seen car accidents there quite often at the principal that area between the traffic light that is Palomar all the way to Santa Rosa. You know, you get up to rapid speeds and it's, you know, it's not lost on anybody that there's a couple sections of road that are like that. So I think that adding in the element of that many more residents bring nighttime traffic, they bring after dinner traffic, they bring a lot of different traffic components to that area of town that's already a bad traffic area in terms of safety and speed. I think adding a multifamily of that magnitude right there just brings a whole other host of issues in terms of traffic patterns in that area. Whereas I think something like a mixed use project, and I understand it's zoned what it is now, but just higher level, it just seems like that area, it just seems like a very bad idea to put massive like amounts of housing right there in an area that is basically surrounded by commercial. You got Red on the right, you got Red on the left, you got Innovation Flex above it. And I don't, perhaps that could be an Innovation Flex area, just or mixed use. I like Innovation Flex with mixed use. I like lofts. I like, you know, that I like that idea, you know. If I was not married, I would live in one. But I live in a married house. I live in my wife's house. So I'm just saying that that's another area I think we should reevaluate. And I think I was hearing the mayor say that maybe he thinks that too, but maybe I was misreading him. But those are the three areas on this. The rest of this, I mean, we talked about different areas like Navajoa, Sarah, these multifamily areas. And you have seen since I've lived here on Navajoa, someone buys a lot, they put a triplex behind a house. You know, every six lots, you'll see somebody do that every 3 or 4 years. So it's not just like this boom overnight where everybody's raising these houses and putting up these sixplexes. So I think that area is, you know, even though it's gotten a little more dense, I'm not worried about that neighborhood becoming just like a metropolis along Morrill Road on the left and the right. But I do also have the concerns with putting a T111 cube on a property overlooking these, you know, a nice little neighborhood on Marchant or on some of these other roads. But I'm also not the type of person to tell people what their house should look like. So that's something that I'm probably not going to die on that hill. But yeah, so I think the Ramona Road, Barrel Creek area, the principal area and the North San Benito neighborhood, Sia Road, Uva Marco, that whole conglomeration, I think we should revisit some of the densities or some of the zoning in those areas.
All right, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. I'm not going to take up too much time. I agree with most of what was said. I think the mayor summarized most of what we were discussing already and the concerns. One of the things that I wanted to comment on, thank you to Councilmember Funk for bringing up the non-city maintained roads, and I think Councilmember Newsom brought it up as well. That's something that was always important to me too, and I'd like to see somehow that get addressed and be something that can be rectified in the near future or as best we can. But a question I had on some of these new zoning areas where we've increased the density, and currently there maybe there's existing streets already, whether they're maintained or not, or there's areas that have paper streets, so they're not developed with streets. But there is a right of way that's designated in these areas, and if we increase the density, then these right of ways, I would imagine, are going to have to get wider. How is that going to be addressed in the future? Because it's going to take a bite out of these lots. And if the single family residences happen to be on one side of the street, are they going to bite into that? Or how is it going to get addressed if a right of way needs to go from 50 to 75 feet?
Actually, a lot of the right of ways are wide enough. Just the developed road isn't as wide as the right of way, so they would have to be improved as development comes along. We don't see instances where we would have to acquire additional right of way to accommodate the density we're proposing. And I think that's where you're going at after that. But again, that level of detailed analysis wouldn't occur until we get a development proposal that comes forward that really changes density of that area, and then we have to evaluate that on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, because I just think back to the Walmart when that was going to be developed, and that became a traffic nightmare on how we were going to handle that. And if we take areas like up around San Benito where we're adding a significant amount of density compared to what it is now, El Camino Real probably wouldn't be negatively affected necessarily, but any connector streets in between certainly could be. You don't want a little teeny tiny, you know, two-lane road that's going to have multifamily on both sides of it. That would just be a nightmare.
Possibly. I mean, when Walmart came along, it was a whole different animal. I mean, the amount of trips that were anticipated with that really excited the heck out of the traffic engineers. So that's a whole different level. And I mean, there are, like I said, as each project comes along, we have to analyze the intensity of that project. Each project comes along with a traffic analysis, and those improvements subsequently follow kind of chronologically with that. This general plan is not going to pencil everything out to that level. Okay. It's going to generally say where these land uses should go. It's going to generally prescribe mobility improvements, but it's not going to get to the level of, hey, we're going to see this development here, so it needs to respond in this particular way. Each project is responsible for doing that on their own as it evolves.
Okay, so just to summarize for me, I think my biggest concern is the increase in density next to single family residences, how we can minimize that or lessen it, as the mayor said, have maybe single family but with a higher density instead of the low density. Because as I mentioned during my time, you know, it might be 12 units per acre, but as you said, with the half units or fractional units and bonus densities, it could be a lot more. And I don't, you know, we went through this at the south end of town, Santa Barbara, Dove Creek development, where the houses that are existing now across the street from that, there were going to be three-story units right across the street. And that just didn't seem right. It was going to be significantly taller. And I'd hate to see that happen in other areas of town as well. So if we can at least focus on something like that, come up with a way to make it more compatible. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks. A couple of comments on that. I believe several months ago, one of our sessions, Councilmember Funk did bring up the issue, certainly of non-city maintained streets, but also not upzoning on non-city maintained streets, because they're pretty bad. This map, and I'm thinking particularly in this triangle area that is up on the screen right now, none of these are non-city maintained? I mean, I realize Amapoa is non-city maintained. That's kind of out of what we're talking in terms of changes. This map doesn't propose to upzone properties on non-city maintained streets, correct?
It does not, and that's why there's islands of yellow and
okay.
Orange.
Gotcha. Okay. I recall that. In regards to the non-city maintained streets, I'd like to keep it simple, but I agree with generally with the concept that perhaps in the mobility element, we simply add a statement that the city would explore, the possibility or avenues for addressing non-city maintained streets and the possibility of somehow bringing them into the system. I wouldn't want to say that it would be our policy to do so, because obviously there's a huge financial commitment in doing that that we would not want to make. There's a reason why they're, as unusual as they might seem to other communities, there are reasons why we have non-city maintained streets. But would it, perhaps, would it be appropriate to just add a simple sentence that the city would explore the possibility or consider avenues for bringing non-city maintained streets into the system?
Yeah, I think we can work on some language and bring some thoughts
language to that effect. Okay.
I think what we need to work on too is a chart. It shows you where the city of Atascadero ranks in terms of its mileage of roads, its revenue, its population, and where we rank in California. It's a very, very challenging where we're at. I think our assistant city manager might want to weigh in too a little bit. It's a very sticky topic. That's all I'll say.
Well, that's why we would only.
But at the pleasure of council, of course, we can add, a soft language policy.
Go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, I would just say on this one, just because this is such a high level document, that something that is such a complex policy is really something. I think Councilmember Newsom was sort of alluding to that it is something that we should probably take outside of this policy for the level of discussion that we really need to have on it and for how council wants to start moving that forward or what that looks like or how they're setting a work plan for staff to start looking to that because Councilmember Funk mentioned she's looking at more specific types of roads, potentially not all of the roads, that everybody sort of has an idea. And I think just because we are talking at such a high level that even if we were sort of to try to craft some language, what would that look like? And are we only talking as neighborhoods are developed or redeveloped? We're talking about those roads. Are we talking about all the roads in general? I just think that in this one, it may be something that we bring back and talk about a policy outside of the general plan to start addressing. This hasn't been a policy that's existed in any of our general plan configurations before. And so this is one I did talk to, just so you know, I did City Manager Lewis and I did sort of discuss this a little bit as well. So
I do think, to be clear, we aren't talking about any new roads, whatever, because new neighborhoods with new roads, we require those to be pretty much self-maintained through HOAs or other mechanisms. This is more talking about, E.G. Lewis designed and named roads that never got built or were built just with dirt and D.G. and potholes. And, that's what we're talking about. It seems to me that staff is a little uncomfortable with it. We could address it outside the general plan. I'm comfortable with doing that. I tend to think of the general plan as a vision and a statement of where we'd like the city to be. And, at some point we need to address the issue. So I'm okay if we do it outside the general plan, but I don't think it's inappropriate to do so. It sounds like staff's not super comfortable with us including something.
No, I would just say because this is it is such a complex issue, and it spans much more than just roadways that were built or not built, right? We're talking about roadways that potentially can never be brought into our system. We're talking about ability of financing, what that looks like for the city. So it is such a complex and complicated that I think this would be one that staff, because it does involve so many of our departments, it's such a intense topic to dive into that it would be something that staff would definitely be more comfortable and feel more appropriate to talk about separately. It's something we can put on for strategic planning or, you know, a workshop on it, but something more that we can delve into separate outside of developing, because how then does that factor and how do we explain that to the public as we move on for 20 years, what roads we do or don't?
I want to let Councilmember Funk comment. She's eager to comment on that, but I had one last thing I want to address. The comments we received from First Five about, you know, incorporating more references to childcare. You know, they came up with some stuff in here that essentially added childcare to, I'll say, about 20 different places. And I'm wondering if it would just be appropriate to add a more generic statement under either economic development or somewhere else that it's hard to achieve, it's hard to attract good, you know, new employers, it's hard to attract, you know, the kind of development we want without having adequate childcare, even though the city kind of has very little direct role in you know, creating childcare. But I don't know that we need to change it in every, you know, every policy statement. I'm not sure what you guys are comfortable with, but I think it's something that's worth mentioning somewhere in the plan, not necessarily 20 times. So,
yes, I think a clear statement could be more impactful than adding words in 20 or however many you mentioned.
Okay, I would like you to, you know, come up with something along those lines. Okay, I'm going to turn over to Councilmember Funk for your comments on the roads and then your comments in general.
Yeah, because I do have comments on other topics as well, but on the roads, and I hear staff, you know, being really uncomfortable about opening up this issue because it is complicated, it's costly, it's difficult, it's an Achilles heel of our community. I do think that there is. It feels like we're being dishonest in our plan if we don't at least acknowledge that this problem exists and that it substantially constrains the development we can do. Right now, the only mention of non-maintained roads in the policy is the mention on page 114, if you look at the PDF, that requires lower density development on non-maintained streets, but says nothing about thinking about even imagining the idea that someday we might create some kind of pathway to help something happen so that they could get fixed. You know, that's the level of, I mean, this is, you know, it's complicated stuff, working with banking, working with legal, working with what can be done. But it clearly constrains the way our city can develop because we don't want to add more dense developments on these, you know, on pothole heaven streets where there's no workable legal mechanism to see that everybody who would benefit from that street improvement can pay into it, can have a way to make that workable and financeable. And so, you know, it constrains what we can do in this plan. And so I think we should, you know, we should acknowledge it. And I would feel better if we had a policy that is very general and explorational in nature, but that indicates that over the next 20 years, we want to think about that to the extent that it constrains and impedes the development of the city. That would be my thought. So I, you know, I would weigh in. It's rare for me not to, you know, accede to guidance from staff on that. But I think that I think we have to be clear to our community about that this is a challenge we face, and you know, have and put that forward. Okay, enough on that. I do on the child